on air and online.
Folks, you're listening to KMS 1450, Bozeman, Montana, 1340 KPRK in Livingston, Montana. You're listening to Saturday Straight Talk with Larry. We had a great hour, Bruce Thatcher. Is there some sort of a, for lack of a better word, a chemical reaction that all of a sudden turns these individuals into what they become in history?
That's a good question that I probably don't know the answer to. I'm trying to
find me an answer, Bruce. Get me an answer now.
with the exception of James K. Polk, where I can't come up with this, there was sort of a point at which each of the other there was a point in which Mehmed and Hitler and Stalin all seemed to focus on one thing. And with Mehmed, it happened fairly early because it had to do, I mean, he was just a teenager and his father was taking him off to war. With Hitler, it happened kind of after, it probably began when he was in Vienna.
Right, after World
War I. And getting involved with a lot of communistic and anti-anarchist kinds of activities, basically, and studying anti-Semitic philosophers. Then he went to war, served pretty admirably in World War One.
He was not a coward, that's for sure.
No, he was not, and he came out of World War One, and he was absolutely devastated by the Treaty of Versailles and what he viewed as the capitulation of his government to the Western powers. And that sort of led him to be good fodder for people who then started, the army started using him to spy on their own.
Right.
To spy out communists. And he was looking for, I guess he was, it was easy for him to find scapegoats. And he kind of went from there. Stalin was just a thug. He was a criminal. He was an opportunist.
It
was when he became involved with Lenin and became very much wrapped up in the communist ideology. I can't document this, but I think that in the beginning, Stalin's participation in all that was purely as opportunistic. He was looking for power.
Right. That was the feeling I had when I read about him, that he didn't particularly give a hoot about communist ideology for the most part.
It was just a tool for him to use.
That's right. It was a tool for him to use to get power. Absolutely. Yeah.
And a tool for him to extend that power beyond the borders of Russia and then the Soviet Union.
Wow. Well, you know, Hitler always remains the classic, but people don't understand Stalin either, and they don't understand the devastation that that man brought to Russia. The millions of people that he literally starved to death.
As nearly as I can tell, in my research, that was very little reported.
Right.
It was tended to be ignored by the press and much of so-called enlightened Western society was very much enamored by the propaganda, actually, of how wonderful the communist system was.
Bruce, would you like to take a caller? We have a caller on the line. Would you like to?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Caller, go ahead. Your name, please.
This is Ken. I live
in
Livingston.
Hi, Ken.
I just recall seeing so many different photographs of Stalin when he was with a group of people, and every time you saw a new photograph, there was always one guy airbrushed out. Is that any truth to that?
I think
he was eliminating his opponents one by one, and they just couldn't airbrush enough photographs.
You know, I had not thought of that particularly, but I do remember in going through the research that I went through of seeing several before and after photos where somebody was airbrushed out in the second photo.
Yeah,
you're right. Usually it was somebody that he had done away with.
They didn't, and it wasn't done, you know, it wasn't done to with too much craftsmanship. It was pretty evident that somebody got airbrushed.
I think it was intentional that people realized, you know, you could be airbrushed out real quick.
Anyway, and enjoy this. I'm enjoying the show.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Ken. Right.
Thanks, Ken.
I hadn't even thought about that, but I do. But when Ken brings it up, and I absolutely remember seeing a number of photos in the stuff I pulled together, where they're stalling with a group of people in one photo, and then a little bit later, there's the same photo that was in some newspaper, and some person is missing.
This is going to sound really weird. Did you look at closely? I started doing this thing about vegetarians. That sounds weird. But, you know, Stalin, Adolf Hitler, Genghis Khan, and many of the great aggressors, shall we say, were vegetarians. Did you ever look at that? Think about that.
I have not. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, Hitler was so vegetarian. He hated anybody that ate meat. He used to criticize some of the people that would sit down at dinner with him sometimes. Of course, he tolerated them, but he was very critical. And I think Stalin was vegetarian. All he had, I think he loved cabbage soup and some other stuff. But I think
Hitler must have had a problem with Goring on that issue.
He did, and some of his generals were big meat eaters too. But he tolerated, you know, a lot of stuff, but he was a real vegan and a half. I mean, he ate no meat whatsoever. I mean, all of his meals were vegetables and what have you. And I used to joke with some of my left-wing friends about Adolf Hitler. Everybody be, you know, you have conversations at dinner and they'd be talking about, I'm a vegetarian. I said, well, you're in good company. You know, you just leave it hanging. Well, who do you know? Well, Adolf Hitler was one.
Pretty cool.
I do that. I love it. But anyway, I was just kind of joking about that. But it's just interesting to look at these people, their personal lives, how they lived, and so forth. And the thing gets me is all these people you point out in their younger years were not bullies, not aggressive, not physically fighters, or anything like that of that nature. Most of them were kind of quiet, I would say not reclusive, but, you know, not outwardly in their actions toward other people at a younger age. And I've always found that kind of amazing. That you did not see that aggressivity at a younger age, and yet today, when we see that, we try to take the kid and isolate him and feed him Ritalin and then calm him down, thinking, God, you could be the next Adolf Hitler or something. But
yeah.
But in fact, it's just kind of the other way around with these folks.
I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. One of the people who read a draft of this material before it got published was a professional psychologist. And he commented, he said, you know, this is very interesting. It's a psychological study, in a way, of history.
Yes, it is.
And you kind of would like to think, well, maybe we ought to be able to identify everybody when they're a teenager, that they're going to be a bad egg. And I haven't seen anything yet in what I've done that indicates that you necessarily can do that. But I do, and I also see that in terms of the people who were affected by these five adamant aggressors, that by and large, they tended not to see what was going on nearly as soon as they could have. A historian once said to me, history's a messy thing. You can't see what's going on unless you're very focused, because there's so many things going on at the same time.
Right, right. But well, of course, Adolf Hitler was, you know, if anybody had read his book, Mein Kampf, and, of course, Sir Winston Churchill said to everybody, you know, you need to read this guy's book, you know.
He was trashed for saying it.
Yes, he was. He was definitely trashed for saying it. He says, you need to read this guy because he is a threat, you know. And, of course, that time, it's kind of odd because, you know, Hitler, I've read a bunch of books, and I've got one called The Meaning of Hitler, and it's a very short book, but it just, there is always this puzzlement and oddity why Hitler appealed to so many people. Do you realize Hitler was at one time the most appealing bachelor in the world? Do you know that?
I hadn't heard that applied to
He was. He was Man of the Year for Time magazine. They considered the most attractive bachelor in the world. I mean, women were swooning over this guy.
He was what he clearly was charismatic.
Yes.
Incredibly charismatic.
Well, you know, that's the thing that really bothers me. I've looked at numerous of his speeches. I've got a CD that has all of most of his speeches on it. And I sat there and looked at this guy, and I'm sitting like, God, how could anybody fall for this guy? Because they were people who were highly educated people who followed him. I'm talking about PhD level people for their time who followed this man. And I look at him and I'm like, God, how could they do that, you know? To me, it's just interesting. Charisma is one thing, you know, and you get, but you sit there and look at this guy, and of course, I guess, you know, there was a lot of things in the background. Germany had gone through the longest depression in history of any other country in the world at the time, and so forth, et cetera. I guess people were just hungry for a leader, so maybe that was one reason. We have another caller in line. Would you like to take a caller?
Sure.
Okay. Caller, go ahead. Your name, please. Go ahead.
Daniel, if you just...
Hey, Daniel, how you doing?
Well, better than average, so that's something.
Well, as long as you're vertical and breathing, Dander, that's okay.
Yeah, at least physically I'm quite strong.
Quick, Daniel, I've only got just a minute or two.
Yeah, I know. So, okay, now here's the thought. Now you have a bully coming out of the Soviet Union, and you have a bully coming out of Germany, and they were going to chew each other up, but the United States had to get in there and lose a lot of blood and money helping the communists. Wouldn't it have been better the meek shall inherit the earth? Why didn't the United States just keep out of that battle and let the two bullies bully each other to death?
Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know, Daniel, a lot of politicians, as you probably do know, very much wanted to stay out of everything, and would have probably if Pearl Harbor hadn't intervened.
Yeah,
the United States was very much uninvolved with what was going on in Europe. Stalin was, at least some of the writings that I researched, Stalin was the more calculating of those two dictators, and Stalin wanted Hitler to battle France and England and tire them out so he could then move in and take over all of Europe. Hitler surprised him by attacking him. I think, and you can jump in on this, Larry, I think that probably at that point the United States got into it because we viewed it as truly a danger to us.
Well, we view Germany as the number one danger because they had the greatest scientific technological prowess of any enemy. And, of course, we had a lot of the Einstein and a lot of the Manhattan folks were saying, hey, Germany is on the verge of developing atomic bomb. Therefore, they should be the number one enemy. And I think that's the reason Germany was picked number one, was for that very reason. If they had gotten the atomic bomb, game over. They had used it quick. Got one more call real quick. Go ahead, call your name.
Hey, that's Clint.
Hey, Clint, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good.
real quick, Clint.
Well, here's something to think about. Who benefited from the World War II? Who financed Germany and who financed us and who made out? And another thing is, the 6.5 million Jews they killed, they never talk about the 25 million Russians that were also killed in the war.
Well, that was what we were talking about. That was what we were talking about. Not only the war, Stalin killed another 20 million plus just starving.
How come nobody ever talks about that? They always talk about the Jewish.
Well, I hate to say it's kind of left-wing media, but anyway, go ahead. Go ahead, right. Bruce, comment.
Clint, the first part of your question, who benefited, is kind of interesting.
It is.
You know, the Soviet Union, the USSR, is the only country in the world that gained territory through World War II.
Yes.
And they gained a lot.
Yeah.
So in one sense, they benefited. In terms of who financed it, that hasn't been so specifically a part of my research. Obviously, the people who had money and thought that they would gain from it, I think, probably were the financiers of it. But they did so. They did so in part in the beginning because they thought they were going to make money, and later on because they didn't really have a choice.
Well, Bruce, I tell you, I certainly, boy, the hour's just gone by like a bullet. I mean, this is just you know, unbelievably interesting to me. But folks, if you'd like to get this book, you can go on to Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. Most any of the big book companies carry this. It's called Adamant Aggressors by Bruce Thatcher. And it's, I tell you, I was able to get in and look at a few of the excerpts from the book, and I, well, as you know, my wife's going to kill me now because I'm going to have this one, too. So, for my history collection. But, Bruce, I certainly appreciate you being on the show with us today, and I know it's kind of hard giving up a Saturday afternoon. And I'd like to have you back. You know, we're facing an election. And, just one quick thing. How do you feel about the guy in the White House? Is he an adamant aggressor?
I don't know that I would identify him as an adamant aggressor, but I think that he is abetting adamant aggressors elsewhere in the world through his lack of leadership, through the approaches he takes.
Oh, I see. Okay, that's a very good observation. Well, Bruce Thatcher, I certainly appreciate you being here. Like I said, I'm going to have you on again, believe me.
Okay, I look forward to it.
And we'll discuss, especially toward the elections. Have a good day, Bruce.